from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, the lowest consumer confidence since April, a spike in interest rates, and a lack of job growth. We'll assess what appears to some to be a downturn in the economy, and we'll discuss Larry Summers' decision to pull his name for consideration to be the next Fed chair. Then at 9:30, we turn our attention once again to the ongoing struggles of City College of San Francisco and its attempts to avoid losing accreditation, as well as the controversy over the power invested in the college's special trustee, Robert Agrella, who will join us for the second half hour. You're invited to join us as well for the whole hour up ahead after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Consumer confidence fell this month to its lowest level since April amid rising interest rates and lower than expected retail sales. And the question is the economy recovery losing its momentum? Well, we're going to discuss the latest economic indicators in this opening Forum segment. I also want to discuss Larry Summers' decision to pull his name for consideration to be the next Fed chair to replace Ben Bernanke. We've got Chris Thornburg with us this morning, and he's founding partner of Beacon Economics. Beacon Economics is an independent economic research and consulting firm headquartered in Los Angeles. And Christopher Thornburg, good to have you back with us on Forum. Welcome.
Nice to be back, Michael. Always good to be here.
Glad to have you. Let's talk first about what seems to be shaping up. It's big news about Larry Summers deciding to pull his name, and real locally here, UC Berkeley's Janet Yellen is now the leading candidate, and things look likely for her, do you think?
Well, maybe. Listen, you know, I've had a couple interactions with Janet over the years, and she's just an extremely bright and capable economist. There's no doubt about it. However, we also know that Obama has sort of a history of choosing people from kind of an inner circle to work for him in various sorts of positions, and it's not clear whether Yellen sort of is, shall we say, in that inner group, if you will, and as such, you may find that Obama will pick somebody that nobody's expecting. Again, remains to be seen at this point in time which direction he decides to go.
Yeah, well, Larry Summers was in that inner group. I guess he didn't have the support, really.
No, he didn't. And, you know, and candidly, the fact that he was even a candidate was surprising to me. It does show you the degree of loyalty Obama has for people in that circle because, you know, candidly, he is, to say, a polarizing figure at the very least. Of course, he's somebody who for a number of years was championing the deregulation of the financial industry. And, of course, we saw what happened there. And there are a lot of folks who just find him personally disagreeable as well. So it would have been a tough road for him, no doubt.
He alienated most of the women in the United States.
Well, you know, candidly, I actually don't think that was one of the issues. Remember that when he made those comments, it was really more of a hypothetical. It was one of a number of potential issues. Now, perhaps in this era of political correctness, even suggesting such a thing might be, shall we say, considered to be unacceptable. I don't think he ever sort of said the statement that women are just not as good as men.
Well, I want you to scope out the economy for us. But before we get into that, is the Fed unlikely, at least that seems to be what the smart money is saying, to deter this massive bond buying program?
Well, look, we know at some point in time they're going to have to start scaling back. I think the bond market reacted a little overreacted to Ben Bernanke's comments earlier in the year. We have to keep in mind that when Bernanke came in, one of his sort of stated goals was to try and take the Fed away from this kind of closeted, almost hidden bureaucracy that would simply come out and you know, make these cryptic messages and try to hold its cards as close to its chest as possible. He said that he was going to create an era of more Fed openness where they were, shall we say, telling people what they were going to be doing far ahead so people could make decisions accordingly. I think his discussion back in June was Ben Bernanke simply living up to those principles. He didn't say when he was going to start tailing back. He simply said that it was going to occur at some point in time in the future. We all knew that. There's no news there. So to me, it's a little bit surprising that the bond markets have reacted so sharply.
Again, we're talking to Chris Thornburg, who is founding partner of Beacon Economics. And like I said, I want you to kind of speculate for us on how the economy looks from your vantage point, Chris. I said initially lowest consumer confidence since April, a spike in interest rates, a lack of job growth from many people's perspective, especially in light of the Thomas Reuters University of Michigan preliminary index falling from August and the retail sales rising less than had been forecast in August. This doesn't look good for the recovery. In fact, it looks like the momentum may be slowing down or even declining. But I think you're a lot more bullish than that, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. And let me take a step back, because right off the bat, I don't put a lot of weight on the consumer confidence numbers. Maybe 20 years ago, those had some predictive value for consumer spending, but that predictive value is gone today, and it tells you very little about what consumers are going to do next. More or less, the consumer confidence survey has become kind of a feedback effect for the 24-hour news cycle, and of course, we know all sorts of nonsense goes on those networks. They're more about sound bites than analysis. Thank God for NPR. And as a result of that, I don't put a lot of stock in that. I think if you take a step back and look at the economy, the answer is it's plodding along. Not really much has changed. There was clearly a slowdown in the fourth quarter of last year that spilled over in the first quarter this year. You can blame all the crazy debates in D.C., kind of worries about the global economy for most of those slowdowns. But the second quarter saw the economy start to edge back towards that still subpar, but okay growth rate. Growth rate's about 2.5% in the second quarter. And then coming into the third quarter, what have we seen? Really not much in the way of slowing down. Take, for example, that retail sales number you cited. Everybody went on and on about how weak the July to August growth rate was. What nobody's acknowledging is the June to July growth rate was huge. And what that means is, you had one big step and then one little step, all said and done. Third quarter retail sales are slated to be, growing at probably a 3.5% rate relative to the second quarter, which is the best retail sales growth number we've had since last year. So that's not a bad number. We know industrial production picked up this morning. Overall unemployment continues to fall, and we continue to add slightly less than 200,000 jobs a month. Now, I'm not saying any of these numbers are spectacular, but
still a soft economy,
any kind of slowdown.
You would still characterize it as a soft economy, though, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. It's been a weak recovery right from the get-go, a variety of reasons for that, holding the economy back, the overall global slowdown in turn predicated on the recession in Europe. We have, of course, here in the U.S., a public sector that continues to see decreases in spending, and that's certainly weighing on the economy. Overall construction also remains far behind the curve, while we are seeing a nice bounce in the resale markets for single-family homes. The construction markets are still very, very depressed.
Yeah, the housing market is pretty hot, but it's still hard for a lot of people to get credit. And I'm wondering just about, the unemployment numbers, because only 63% of Americans are in the labor force now. That's the lowest level of participation in 35 years.
Yeah, exactly. But, again, you got to take a step back and sort of slice and dice those numbers. About a third of that represents what I would call a true sort of decline in people who really can work, who are going to be in the labor force, discouraged workers, so to speak. But about another third of that is people going back to school, and I think we all appreciate that ultimately investments in human capital are a good thing. And, of course, another third of it is just demographic changes. The boomers are in that 55 to 65-year-old range, which is a period of time when most folks tend to start dropping out of the labor force. And just the sheer demographic changes in our economy mean that the participation rates were going to come down at some amount, regardless of what the economy was doing. All said and done, I think if you look over the course of the last year, the U.S. economy has added a little over 2 million jobs, of which about 1.8 million or so are full-time jobs, and the other 300,000 are part-time for non-economic reasons. That is to say, part-time jobs for people who only want part-time work.
Well, I don't know how much stock you or others want to put in consumer confidence, but there are higher payroll taxes, there's limited employment opportunities, and there's restricted income growth, and that all adds up to, again, consumer confidence drop, right?
Yeah, but let's go back to the income statement. Again, now, please keep things in context here, because I'm not saying this is spectacular, but personal income actually has been growing at a fairly decent rate relative to the last couple of years. And indeed, while taxes did go up pretty sharply at the start of the year, disposable income, that is, say, income after taxes paid, is higher now than it was last year at this point in time. So, again, slightly better results there. A lot of this has to do with the fact that the labor market for high-skilled workers has really gotten back almost to normal levels of tightness. The unemployment rate with people with a bachelor's degree and above is about 3.8% at this particular point in time. And when it gets down below that 4% level, that kind of competition for those skilled workers tends to start pushing wages up. Ultimately, this is a good thing. We're still very much at the beginning of the process, but you can definitely see a U.S. economy that seems to be gaining a little bit of underlying strength. Indeed, an economy that will probably be able to, shall we say, burst through those sequestration problems and continue to grow right into next year.
Dollar's still pretty flat, though. You keep talking about the global economy, and the prices for U.S. Treasury debt have risen.
Yeah, just a little bit. We know doubt about that. Now, keep in mind that Treasury debt has been rising since the start of the year. It's not been since Bernanke's comments in June, and certainly not just in anticipation of the end of quantitative easing. Interest rates at the end of last year were just down to incredibly low levels. Again, going back in time, remember we had the complete deadlock over sequestration. We would have seen much larger tax increases and a very sharp reduction in spending. They did come up with a semi-compromise, if you will, that sort of averted the kind of disaster that may have been caused by a lack of action. And, of course, as that happened, you saw the kind of fear that had pushed so many people into bonds to fade away, and people are finding other places in the economy to invest their money. Ultimately, again, this is a positive thing, but it does mean that interest rates were going to come up somewhat.
We've got Christopher Thornburg on the line, and he'll be with us until 9:30 when City College of San Francisco's so-called czar, Robert Agrella, will be joining us, and you can join us now. In fact, we welcome your questions and comments. What are your sentiments about the economy? How optimistic are you or pessimistic at this point? And what's your own sense evaluating the economy, or how do things look off on the horizon? But also, if you have questions, we welcome hearing them. Our toll-free number is available, and it's 866-733-6786. You can also email us. Email address is forum@kqed.org, so feel free either to call us at 866-733-6786 or to email us, forum@kqed.org. And, of course, you can also post any questions or comments you have immediately onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment as we hear from you about your own assessment of the economy or any questions you might have about how things look economically and how things seem to you. And you can also, of course, tweet us. Our Twitter handle's @KQED Forum. There's a comment right off the website, Chris. Felix writes, consumer confidence rises or falls based on prices and job prospects. Prices have risen sustainably in the things that matter, housing, transportation, insurance, food. Meanwhile, jobs are harder to get than ever, mainly because businesses prefer foreign workers who come here to help move jobs overseas. Less money in means less money out. Higher prices mean fewer purchases. Maybe the 1% want us all to spend foolishly and take on debt in order to feel successful, but the 99% is wised up. Like millions of others, I will put off buying a fancy new Apple product or a new car when the old one runs just fine.
Well, again, I appreciate his, shall we say, dismal assessment, but again, taking a step back and looking at the numbers, we have a couple million more jobs, and real incomes are rising right now, a little faster pace than they have the last couple of years. So as opposed to things contracting, quite the opposite, the economy is indeed expanding. Now, again, not maybe at a pace we find sufficient or we wish, but ultimately, this idea that the economy is contracting is just wrong. The data doesn't support that opinion.
Well, again, we'll hear from listeners on this. Do you have confidence that the confidence will improve, and consumer confidence in the economy will improve? And,
well, again, let me...
I mean, that's how I'm just framing it in those terms, yeah. That we're rebounding from the recession or we're not rebounding.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what were you going to add, Chris?
Well, I just got to say, again, I go back to the idea that consumer confidence number doesn't really tell us a lot anymore. It has very little predictive powers. There's been plenty of times where we've seen consumer confidence plummet, even as consumer spending starts to accelerate. So you got to be very cautious of those numbers. More often than not, I find they point us in the wrong direction.
Does it seem logical, though, that there might be a good deal of worry over these high interest rates out there?
Well, they're not high interest rates. Look, yes, okay, mortgage rates up to 4.5%, maybe a little higher, 4.6% right now, 4.7%. But, you know, that's lower than at any point for 40 years prior to 2010.
Yeah, that's true. But they're higher than they have been.
Higher than they have been, but come on. I mean, that's it's crazy talk to say they're high. Interest rates are still very, very good right now.
And you're also optimistic about job creation as opposed to this labor force participation where you've got only 63% of Americans in the labor force?
Well, again, what you just cited is what I would call a social crisis. Clearly, there is a group of people out there today who are being displaced. They're being displaced by fancy new information technology that has eliminated the need for a lot of low-skilled jobs in our economy. They're, of course, being displaced by the kind of slowdown in the economy we've seen. But ultimately, the overall growth of the economy is a function of sort of per-worker productivity. And for those workers who are in the workforce, productivity levels are higher than they've ever been. So what that means is we as a nation need to reach out to those displaced workers. We need to help them get retrained. We need to make sure that they have an appropriate safety net. But that wouldn't necessarily imply that the U.S. economy can't grow. Ultimately, the kind of high production productivity workers, those high-skilled workers, are in place. They are making money. They are doing good things, and that they will be able to propel the broader economy forward. So it's a social crisis, not an economic one.
And exports have held up.
Kind of. You know, they've been very flat lately because of the weak world economy, not because, by the way, of the inability for the U.S. to compete. Indeed, exports should be one of our really highlights, if you will, in our economy today, because the dollar is, in real terms, 20% cheaper than it was a decade ago. So we are very, very competitive on an international standpoint. And indeed, the forces for outsourcing have slowed in part because the dollar is down and will probably stay down. But with you know, a Europe in recession, with China that's dealing with its own sort of debt issues, there's just not a lot of aggregate demand growth in the U.S. and the world economy overall, and as a result, that exports have been flat. We are seeing some better numbers from overseas. China seems to be in the midst of a very modest acceleration, and we actually saw positive growth rates in Europe in the second quarter. So that should suggest that exports will pick up a little bit of speed, but you know, again, this is a slow motion kind of situation, and we probably won't really feel the overall positive effects of that until next year sometime.
All right, let me go to your calls. And again, if you'd like to join us, this is only a half-hour segment, so the time to do it would be now. Again, our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. And let's bring on Peter. Peter, you're on. Good morning.
Yes. Hi. You mentioned that the sequestration hurts the economy, yet if you look at the understand a little bit of the law, the sequence, the debt ceiling is not part of the Constitution, and therefore any new law, including budgets, that conflicts with it trumps it. Therefore, if a new law mandates the spending for a particular program and there's not enough money in the Treasury, then the president should be authorized to borrow money because it should not be held back by the debt ceiling thing, which is the older law.
Yeah, Chris Thornburg, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it raises a great point. Now, of course, the caller is being a little more forward-looking because one of the things we haven't talked about was the potential shutdown of the federal government as a result of the kind of vicious debates over Obamacare and the overall level of federal spending. Some in Congress have advocated shutting down the government in order to try and force the defunding of this Affordable Health Care Act. And that could be, obviously, a big hit to the economy, particularly if at some level there becomes some sort of semi-default in the Treasury markets. I would like to say that that won't happen, but be that as it may, I think the caller's right. There are ways around it. Obviously, the president could just ignore it. Or equivalently, I don't know if you've heard about this kind of crazy backdoor thing they could do, but they could have the Treasury issue like a $1 trillion commemorative point coin or something silly like that, issue that to the Treasury and issue, shall we say, money against it that we could be used to fund the government in the short run. I just hope we don't go there at all. I hope that the cooler heads prevail in Washington, D.C., because you know, candidly, if you ask me what the biggest problem in our economy today, it's the fact that on the left and the right, ideologues who are more interested in dogma and placating their base seem to be in control of the policy debates, and as a result of that, we seem to be focusing a lot of energy and effort on things that really aren't a true priority in our economy today.
Political polarization far exceeds just about anything else in terms of the effect on the economy. And let me thank Peter for the call and move on to more of your calls. Karen joins us next. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I think the real problem is the concentration of more and more wealth in fewer American hands. And I was bolstered in that belief just the other day when I heard that one of the titans of Silicon Valley was now worth $41 billion, which to me is the economy of a small country, or maybe even not so small. Why is this happening?
That's a good point, Karen. In fact, I'm looking at an email from a listener named Regina who says, what percentage of people buying property are foreign investors? And by the way, I sold property in the 70s and 80s at interest rates were 17%. But we've got more foreign investors. We've got more concentration of wealth in that 1%. And this is all affecting the economic outlook, certainly, isn't it, Chris Thornburg?
It is, but I would say more in the midterm than the short term. I agree with the caller. It really worries me, particularly in as much as the court of some of those decisions in the Supreme Court have not only given these sort of folks unprecedented political access as well. We know that some of these folks pour in hundreds of millions of dollars into these super PACs, creating kind of these dark pools that go out and fund all sorts of candidates. And it does worry me to death. This kind of concentration of power and wealth can ultimately lead an economy and a society in a bad direction. But I think in the short term, it's probably not an issue, shall we say, that has a tremendous impact on what's going to happen over the course of the next couple of years. So, in other words, I would say to the caller, worry. Continue to make waves, talk about it, get people to know it, and let's work to try and reverse some of the policies that put us into this position. But at the same time, also understand it's not an immediate crisis.
Well, I wonder what you say to a listener named Ryan who writes on our website, how does your guest view the sustainability of creating economic activity off the back of very low interest rates, even after the most recent rise in a Federal Reserve that is expanding their balance sheet by $1 trillion a year? At some point, there will be inflation or a deterioration of the U.S. dollar, which will be devastating to the working class in this country, and this recovery is totally contrived through financial engineering yet again.
No, actually, that's not true. Keep in mind that interest rates have been falling consistently for 20 years now. As your other caller noted, interest rates at one point in time for mortgages were 17%, and they've been just falling quite a bit since then. Quantitative easing may have lowered short-term rates 0.4%, 0.5% maximum, according to folks who study this sort of stuff. Ultimately, lower interest rates are a function of the fact that the world is simply awash with capital relative to demand. And part of that, of course, is the weak growth in the developing world. Part of it's also information technology, which makes the cost of investment very cheap relative to what it used to be. And that result is that low interest rates are really here for us, with us to stay. Now, as for the potential for inflation, again, I understand the worries there, but keep in mind of the $2 trillion pumped into the economy, over $1.8 trillion of that is sitting in the banks in the form of excess reserves. In other words, it's not in the money supply. And as a result of that, unless the banks start to lend more, the chance of inflation in the near term is basically zero.
Christopher Thornburg, founding partner of Beacon Economics, independent economic research and consulting firm in Los Angeles. Thanks for being with us, Chris.
Enjoy. Great to be here, Mike.
We've got another segment coming up for you. We're going to talk about the ongoing struggles of City College with the man who is in charge. Robert Agrello will be joining us after a brief break, so stay where you are. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.